I went from being like basically the secretary. And I was like, you know what? I can do this. I can still work. I don't have to just be a mom. I can be multiple things. So my BlackBerry would go off at 5:30 on a Saturday and she'd be like, I need this proposal. And I'm like, well, I'm out to dinner. And she's like, but I need it by 9:00. And I'd have to run home. And I'm like, I don't own this company, right? Like, what am I doing? So I was pretty stressed and overweight. And to me, sometimes the money, the title, the ego, all of that gets in the way of what's really important. And my health was more important. The first thing you have to remember with work is no matter what you do for a living, unless you literally are a surgeon, nobody's dying on your table. Sitting in the back of the room listening to him, he wasn't saying anything earth-shattering that I didn't know. It was just the way he was saying it, that it just resonated. And I was, the realization in the back of the room and then talking to him after was, I really lost Lori. It was little things like that, stuff like that he mentioned, and spending more time with people and doing, getting more experiences, and all of these things that Jesse started to talk about. As I started to do it, I was like, wow, like I could feel myself coming back to life and wanting more and doing more.
Lori Wintonik. She is one of the most gripping, well-balanced, and fiery guests that I've ever had the pleasure of speaking with. Lori pioneered the first part of her career as an extremely successful female executive in not just one, but two companies, all the while juggling motherhood and her relationship with her husband. And today, Lori talks about how that very dedication led her to deprioritize one of the most important people in her life, herself. Lori also talks about how a chance meeting with entrepreneur Jesse Itzler, in her own words, helped her bring herself back to life, and how now she's helping others create success in all the buckets of their lives, from business to wellness to relationships. And she shares her frameworks with us on this very episode. You're not going to want to miss this one. Trust me. So without further ado, I'm Dan Russo, and this is Grow, the podcast where each week we bring on entrepreneurs, creators, and other inspiring guests to help you grow into the best version of yourself.
All right, Lori, thank you so much for being here. How are you today?
I'm great, Dan. Thanks so much for having me.
Awesome.
How are you
I'm
doing?
I'm excited that you're one of the early episodes of this podcast because, and you know, just full transparency for the audience, you and I have been working together through one of Jesse Itzler's coaching programs, or perhaps even multiple because I'm signed up for two. And our conversations, I feel like we've gotten to know each other really well. And you're an incredible coach and an incredible, you know, just person in general. And I think there's a lot of wisdom that you have to share, both your own and also, you know, through the coaching programs with this audience. So I'm really excited for this interview. And so just thank you again for giving me your time.
I am so grateful that you asked me to do this. And I am thankful that I got to meet you through the program, and watching your journey the last few months has been amazing to me. And it makes what I do that much more exciting and rewarding. So I really feel like I'm the one who's blessed here because, you know, I got to meet you and be a part of your journey. And now I get to share this with you, which is
thank
awesome.
Thank you so much. That means a lot. And, you know, that being said, I'm ready to just dive in. So I want to start from like square one. You know, who is Lori? Like, you know, where are you from? And just talk to me a little bit about the environment that Lori was created in.
Loaded questions, Dan. So I am from New Jersey, born and bred, grew up here, Jersey girl, true and true. And have a hard time. My husband keeps saying he wants to leave. I have a hard time, you know, leaving my Jersey roots. So I'm here for now. Grew up in a wonderful family. I grew up in Garwood, New Jersey originally, which is a really small blue collar town. My father and my mother both grew up there. They dated in, you know, middle school through high school, got married. Everybody knew who we were. You know, most of my family, aunts, uncles, great aunts and uncles, everybody lived there. So it was a really tight knit community. And I still talk to a lot of the people that I, you know, grew up with until I was 10 when I moved. And you know, Italian Catholic family, a lot of values, church on Sunday, grandma lived down the street. And I mention that because my grandmother really is kind of who formed who I am. I spent a lot of time with her. I have an older sister, Gina, who's 4 years older than me. I have younger brothers who are twins, John and Joe. And my sister was always in trouble, and my brothers were, you know, twin boys in a handful. So my mother's time was really taken, you know, up dealing with them. So I used to walk down to my grandmother's house and spend a ton of time with her, cooking and doing all of these things and just learning real life skills and lessons from her. And she was probably one of my best friends. And so moved to Clark, had a little bit of a different growing up from 10 to, you know, my high school career, and you know, that was a very different time. But I was always the kid that did what we were supposed to do. I did all my homework. I got good grades. Yep. I was involved in sports. I did stuff in the community. My mother always called me the textbook child. I was easy. And but I always wanted certain things. My mother used to get mad at me because she always used to say I'm so smart, but all I wanted was to have a family. I wanted to grow up and, you know, I was Italian. I wanted to grow up and start a family and just do that. And my mother's like, but you could be a brain surgeon. You could be anything you wanted to be. And I was like, okay, but all I want to be is a mom. So I went off to college. Cheerleader, president of the choir, you know, I taught catechism when I was in high school to first and second graders. I volunteered. I was on the science league team. I was a little bit of a nerd.
You were a real sneaker.
But yeah. So I've always kind of just done the stuff. Like, it was just things I wanted to do and I just did it. I didn't really think about it. But I always wanted to be involved, and anything I could do to help people was really the way I went. So now I go to college. I went to Rutgers, had a great 4 years there, got involved in the rec board, which was a community-based club, so to speak. And we ran all the recreation on campus, all the intramurals. But we also did a lot of civic stuff, which was really important to me. And one of my favorite things is we had Special Friends Day, where special needs children, and I don't like to call them special needs. I always call them like the special ability, I like to say. The special ability children would come in and we would spend the day with them. And, you know, we'd have such great experience and just we would buddy up. So you'd have one kid with you for the whole day. And we would do all these great things. And I'm in the pool playing water polo with this, you know, this boy, and he's drowning me, and you know, but we're having such a blast. And like at the end of the day, when they hug you and they're like, thank you, this was the best day of my life, and you're able to say, well, this was the best day of mine
too.
That's
awesome.
You know, so that was college for me. And I got out of school, didn't know really what I wanted to do. I started college as a chemistry major, again, a little bit of a geek. Most people don't know that about me. And I ended up leaving with a business major. And I decided, wasn't sure what I wanted
to
do.
Talk to me a little bit about how you decided to go from chemistry to business. What was it about that switch why did you want to make it?
So if you go to Rutgers and you go for a science-based major, you are in lecture halls with 500 and 600
kids. Oh my God,
kids. And again, this was a long time ago. Don't get me wrong. It could be very different now. But I loved chemistry. I wanted to be a high school chemistry teacher. That's really what I wanted to do. And I would sit there and I was fine in the labs. I would have all of these labs. I think as a freshman, I had a senior level lab class and killed it in that class. But in the lecture halls, I was lost. I was lost. And I could not get past organic chem for the life of me. I took it twice. And, you know, I'm in the honors program at Rutgers and I can't get through, and I'm like failing organic chem and it's my major. So I'm like, okay, what do I want to do here? I have to figure something out. And because I was so involved, I met with the dean of students who knew me very well. And I was sitting in his office and I'm like, I don't know what to do. Like, I'm usually a dean's list student. I've never, my lowest grade in school was a B in art because I don't draw well. Like, I'm not, you know, this was like really like a slap in the face for me. And we sat down and we talked it through. And he's like, you can still be a teacher if you don't have a science major. You could still do the things you want to do, but we can change your major and then you just need to get your certification. So I was like, okay. I was like, my mom's never going to let this happen. So he actually called my mother with me in his office and we had a conversation, the three of us, and talked it all through. And it was decided then that I would switch gears, take the classes that I had already taken that would count towards the major so I wouldn't lose any credits, and change over. And it actually was the best thing I could have done because it enabled me to have such a better college experience because I wasn't so stressed and so crazy. And the reality is, I mean, now, like I know this now, that your major does not matter. Yes. I'm not doing anything that has anything to do with anything that I studied in college. It's really what you choose to do. And I think, you know, Jesse Itzler says this a lot, like, go to college and experience everything. Take every class you can. Try to figure out, like, what you love and what you don't. And I think because of Dean Schneider, I really had the opportunity to do that.
That's incredible. I mean, the couple things I want to pull out there and similarities with my own story. The one thing that I think is that you, first of all, you made a pivot, which is, you know, incredible to say the least, because a lot of people just continue down the path that they're on, no matter how stressful or anxiety provoking or whatever that is. And they don't even think to say, pull up and say, wait a minute, what about the path over there or this path over here? And they don't consider the alternatives. So I think that's incredible that you were able to make that pivot. And I'm sure that that's, you know, prepared you to make other pivots in your life as well. And then the other thing that I want to say is the idea of taste testing, as I called it in college. I actually took an entire semester because I entered as a history major at the University of Maryland. So though I know those 500 person lecture halls, they're still there. Although I've been out for 6 years now, so maybe unless they did away with them. But I know exactly the type of, you know, pivot that you're talking about, because I did a whole semester. I entered as a history major, shopped around for an entire semester, criminology, business statistics, economics, all these different classes. And then I ended up in journalism, which is kind of funny because, you know, I'm not really using that degree right now in the way that I thought I would. You know, I think it's incredibly great message to send that, you know, you should go to college, taste test everything, but at the same time, you know, focus on, you know, maybe some of the softer skills, right? Or what you could use those, you know, that knowledge and that experience for in unique ways after college, right? If you're a doctor or 100%. A lawyer, maybe different, but
right. If you know where you, if you want to be highly specialized and you know you got to go in and there's a course of study you have to follow, absolutely. Right. But if you're not sure, there's no need to make a decision early on. And you don't, you know, you may find that that one class that you take that you never thought of might end up being your passion.
Absolutely.
And if you don't try it, you'll never know. So that was, you know, that's 100% something that people should be open to. And I think as adults, as we're, you know, this new generation going into college, we need to tell them that. We need to make sure they know it's okay to not know what you want to do. I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up.
I love that.
Right? At 48 years old, I have no idea what I want to be when I grow up because I have no intent of growing up anytime soon. And it's okay.
That's incredible.
It's okay.
And thank you for saying that, because, you know, as someone who is a young person, you know, coming out of college, right? At 22, I felt as though I needed to have my entire life figured out. There was pressure to pick the right major so that I could have the right career, so that I could have X, Y, Z. And that's not been my path at all. Actually, a lot of my success has come at the edge of making those pivots or taking a leap into something that I had never done before or something that wasn't really a surefire thing. And it sounds like that's a similarity in terms of your journey as well. So how did you take the college experience that you had? You said you didn't use the degree in the way that you thought you would. What did you use that business degree for after college? And how did that kind of jumpstart your career?
I got out of college. I had no idea what I wanted to do because I was like, do I want to go get a teaching certification? Like, what do I want to do? I said, you know what? I don't know. At the time, through high school and during college, I was a nanny for a family. And I took care of their two kids. So that summer, I literally just nannied. I made a ton of cash. And I just nannied. And I was like, I'm going to figure it out. My parents were freaking out. Like, what are you doing? And I said, I don't know if I want to work in an office. I don't know if I want to teach. I really don't know what I want to do. So I called a temp agency and said, look, I need to work. It's September. The kids are back in school. I'm not nannying. Like, I need to have a job. So they placed me in a computer consulting firm 10 minutes from my house. It was supposed to be a 1 week placement. I went in. I was like the receptionist. I was supposed to answer the phone, do some filing. That was it. Literally was in the office for 3 days. And the owner said to me, okay, like, you are super smart. I don't know what you're doing in this role, but like, I want you to work here full time. And I want to build a whole position around
you. That's incredible.
So I was like, okay, like it's 10 minutes from home. You're going to give me a full-time job. You're going to give me benefits. I'm 20 at the time. I was 21 years old. I'm like, okay,
why
sounds
not,
good.
Right?
So I took the job, literally took the job. The next week, I because of the temp thing, I had to work a couple weeks as a temp so they would get paid. And then I think like November 1st, I actually physically started full time, but I had worked there the whole time. And I ended up staying there for 16 years as the managing director. I ran the entire business. So I went from being like basically the secretary. Within like 2 months, I was the office manager. It was a very small firm. And within a few, probably 2 years from there, from the office manager, I was the managing director and just ran everything. And it was a lot of the business skills that I learned in college, but most of it was just me. Right. It was who I was operationally. It was being able to do, and I think some of this was from high school and from college, all of the experiences I had, all the clubs that I was in, the sports, that, you know, the cheerleading, the gymnastics I had done. So I was able to take multiple projects. And I hate when people say they can multitask, because there is no such thing as multitasking. You are only physically able to do one task at a time. But I have the ability, and you mentioned the word pivot before, I can pivot between multiple items as needed without losing time refiguring out where I was when I was doing it. So I don't multitask, but I have multiple tasks that I can give focus to one at a time.
And that's a really important skill. Makes sense. Because I call it context switching, right? And it's something that I developed in my last job, because I was running multiple things. At one point, I actually had two roles that I was working full-time as. I was the director of real estate operations, and I was the director of communications at the same time for like about a 2 month overlap. I was running both, you know, departments and teams. And so that's an important skill to be able to context switch like that. And I think it's so funny that you related it back to high school too, because if you think about it, like that's probably where like we build so much of who we are, but also the skills that we learn and the things that we're good at, right? We develop those earlier on, right? And certainly new experiences are going to come in. You're going to develop new skills. But I really love that you related it back to your early days as a kid, because really that's what I think a lot of, you know, who we are. And when I think back to, you know, who I was in high school, you know, what I'm doing now, right, really just relates to, you know, who I was then. So it's kind of just more of the same. So I love that. I love that.
Absolutely. And I think probably 75% of my time management ability and the skills that I learned are because of high school, because I knew I had to get up and I had to be at AP Physics an hour before school opened, and then school, and then I had to make sure I did this, that, and the other thing, and then I had, you know, after school I'd have practice, I'd have to go teach catechism, I'd have a game, I'd have to do my homework, I had to, you know, come home, I had to clean, I had to do certain things. Like, my days were fully planned out, and I got everything done. It transferred to college. I lived that way in college too, and then into my career. So 16 years in, computer consulting firm, was amazing. I actually had always said when I had a family, I was going to be a stay-at-home mom. And so my husband and I got married in 2000. I got pregnant, was having my first daughter November of 2001, who's going to be 20. And, you know, this November, and reminds me all the time that I am, you know, the mother of a 20-year-old, which sure I still can't imagine how that happened. Yeah, it's like, oh my God. But my boss at the time said to me, now mind you, this is 20 years ago. She said to me, I don't want you to leave, and I know how important it is for you to be a mom. How about I set you up from home?
Wow.
So I was working 20 years ago. I literally left the office when I went on maternity leave with my desktop tower, a huge monitor, an inkjet printer, you know, like carried it all home and set it up. And I worked part-time for the first 6 months while I had my daughter at home. And then I was going to the office once a month for a day. I would go in, you know, so like she really worked with me. And so I stayed there for a very long time. I had my second daughter while I worked there. My husband luckily works from home. He, you know, so I could go to the office and he would be home. And I was like, you know what? I can do this. I can still work. I don't have to just be a mom. I can be multiple things. And that was my first realization that I could make that work.
That's incredible.
And
that's incredible.
Because No, it was important that I was able to see that a little bit, because a lot of people, you know, you're going to say that they don't realize that, or they'll sacrifice one for the other.
Absolutely.
And I realized, so I was still more into being a mom than I was at work. That job was work for me. It wasn't a career. It was work. And my family was the most important thing. And then by the grace of God, I was at a christening with multiple friends. We were having a conversation. I was saying how I was really stressed because it got to the point where I was running that company while raising two kids.
Still the computer
I was back
company,
in the office.
Correct?
Still the computer company. I was there 4 days a week now. But you know, this was the generation of CrackBerry. So my BlackBerry would go off at 5:30 on a Saturday and she'd be like, I need this proposal. And I'm like, well, I'm out to dinner. And she's like, but I need it by 9:00 and I'd have to run home. And I'm like, I don't own this company, right? Like, what am I doing? So I was pretty stressed and overweight, very overweight, because when I worked there, I used to go to Dunkin' Donuts. I would get a extra large French vanilla iced coffee, light and sweet. And I would get a coffee cake muffin. So that breakfast alone, walking into my office, was probably about 1,300 calories. Then I would get whatever fast food for lunch. I'd have another iced coffee and another muffin at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, come home, eat dinner. Like, I was really unhealthy. But the stress, everything. So I see this family at a christening. I'm telling – they're like, wow, Lori, like, you don't – I'm like, I'm stressed to like you wouldn't believe. And – they went home and the wife said to the husband, oh, I really wish Steve, who was the owner of this other company, needed somebody because I think Lori and him would work well together. 2 weeks later, Steve's assistant gives her notice and they call me. They're like, send your resume. I'm like, resume? I've worked 16 years for one place right out of college. I don't have a resume. I don't even know how to. So I throw something together. I get the resume. I end up getting offered the position to be an executive assistant for the owner of this other company. And I'm like, you know what? It's a total step down. And it was a huge pay cut and everything. But I'm like, but it's a change of quality of life. And I need
absolutely.
It. I took the job. A month later, I was the office manager. 3 months later, I was the director of administration. And then ended up being the executive vice president of operations for the firm because my skill set just precedes me. Like, the executive assistant role, like, literally, I walked in, I did all the work one day, and I'm like, now what?
Yeah, absolutely. You know? And that seems to be a pattern with every position that you've had, which is even, and talk to me a little bit about, was that like an ego check or a gut check for you? Was it hard for you to step down from being the managing director of a company, regardless of size or how big it is, right? From a title perspective, you did take a step down to become an executive assistant. And it wasn't a small step, right? It was a pretty large step. So talk to me about, you know, how did you make that decision and how did it feel?
I made the decision because of the quality of life I needed. To me, titles don't matter. I'm not a title person. I know who I am and I know what I'm capable of, and whatever you call me is fine. So it was hard because I knew it was going to be a financial strain, but I also knew health-wise it was more important. The flexibility I had there was better. The computer consulting company was amazing. And the opportunities that she gave me was amazing, and I will be forever grateful for that time, but I needed a change. And this new position really allowed me to grow again, because I was I was doing everything at the other company. There was no room for me to even like try to use my brain for. I just was doing it automatically. So coming in and starting kind of at the bottom and having to work my way back up was great for me. It also afforded me within 7 months of working for the company, the new company, I decided to get my health in check.
Awesome.
And I went to a weight and wellness counselor. 10 months following that, I lost 60 pounds, got in the best health of my life for, you know, at that time. And because the stress was gone, it was a totally different environment. And to me, sometimes the money, the title, the ego, all of that gets in the way of what's really important. And my health was more important. Being able to walk a great adventure with my daughters and not be huffing and puffing was more important than any $25,000 bonus, than any title on my business card that nobody even sees anymore. Like, it just didn't matter. And I worked there for 10 years. It was a wonderful company. It was hard. And I've said this a lot, and you might've heard me say this on our coaching calls. I was the only skirt in a room full of suits. And it was a financial planning firm. So it's very traditional. It's very different. And women executives are not exactly the same as male executives in a situation like that. But I was always treated really well. I love the people I work with. And it was a great time for me to grow and really develop more and more of myself. While doing that, I'll get to how I met Jesse. So about 4 years ago, we had a kickoff meeting every year and I always helped get the speakers. So 4 years ago, I invited Jesse to come speak at my firm's kickoff meeting. And that's how I met him. And he gave his speech, and then we were in the back of the room afterwards talking, and he mentioned he was going to be launching this Build Your Life resume course. And I said, well, God, after that talk, I feel like, oh my God, my life is sucks. Like, I, you know, all these things I thought were so great. I'm like, wait a minute, like on your happiness meter on a scale of 1 to 10, how happy are you? If you put all of your buckets in a blender, like, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, where do you fall? I'm like, I'm a 5. Like, I'm not even like a 7 or an 8. I'm a 5. Like, if I'm being honest. And he said, he's like, take this course. I think it would be great for you. And that's how my whole journey started. That's with incredible. Jesse, is I took his course and I started to apply his principles, and it's really changed. It changed my life completely.
That's incredible. I want to go back to something you said. I want to continue on the Jesse thread. Mm-hmm. I was about to ask the question of how you even met him in the first place.
Sorry.
No, please. You're doing the interviewing for me. It's great. I want to go back to a quick part there. You said that the health became your foundation. And I think that's something that I realized too a little bit earlier in my career, where I was like, you know, I was working really long hours. I felt a little burnt out. And I had realized that from my, because I had always been an athlete, a runner. I realized from high school to college, I did 8 years of pretty much straight competitive running, and the body needed a break. I was a little broken down, a little injured after I had exited college. But I realized that I really hadn't done any sort of running or consistent fitness exercise for three years when I got out of college. And so a couple of years ago, I decided to start slowly making my health a priority again. And it was a very slow process. I needed to go to physical therapy to get some things figured out. I needed to figure out what I enjoyed again, right? I enjoy running still, but I don't want it to be everything that I do, etc. So, but this pandemic, if anything, has put such an emphasis on how health needs to be your foundation, because everything pours out of you. And if you're not healthy, then you can't obviously operate. I always say it's got to be selfish sometimes in order to be selfless, right? So in order to be your best self, you have to be healthy. You have to take care of your mental and your physical wellness. And then you can go out and be selfless and give yourself and do your best work and let that speak for you. So I just think it's incredible that you made that, you know, same, you know, realization. If somebody is in the position that you are in, where they're prioritizing everything else, their work, their family, their kids, their relationships, you know, their hobbies, etc., over their health, and they just feel as though they're in this spot where they're anxious, they're stressed, and they don't even know how to get started, what would your message to them be?
Small steps. The first thing you have to remember with work is, no matter what you do for a living, unless you literally are a surgeon, nobody's dying on your table. And I tell this to everybody that's worked for me in the past, and it was something I had to learn. If I shut my phone off at 6 p.m. and I don't answer the emails until 9 a.m. tomorrow morning, nobody's going to die on my table.
There you go.
We've lost sight of that because of the phones, the emails, the constant communication. Everybody expects like instant, you know, communication and response. No, it's okay. And we have to disconnect. You have to be able to give yourself ample time in the areas you need. So I used to tell this to the people I work with too. When they would come to work and I'd see them on their phones texting their friends or whatever, it's like, look, like, I get it. Everybody needs a break. I said, but do you want me calling you at 7 o'clock at night on a Saturday when you're out to dinner with your friends? They're like, no. I go, well, then don't use my time texting your friends at work. It's got to go both ways.
Makes a lot of sense.
And they were like, you're right. I said, I will never call you at 5:30 or 5:05. If you leave at 5 o'clock, I'm not going to call you. So keep your focus where it needs to be. So if you're working a 9-to-5 job, do your 9-to-5 job, do it well. If it requires you to spend some extra time, put the extra effort in, but set your boundaries. Yep. Right? So set the boundaries for work. Make sure that you're not making yourself think you're more important than you are in the greater scheme of things. Because the reality is, I was 16 years for a company. I was 10 years for a company. I ran the entire company. I walked away from both jobs. And guess what? Both companies did not fold. They're doing great, as they should be. You are replaceable. Yep. Where you are not replaceable is to your family and to yourself. So that's where your focus needs to be, not on the 25% of your life that you spend at work that gets 90% of your focus. No, switch that. 25% of your life should get 25% of your focus. The other 75% of your time should get your 75% focus. And for me to be a better wife, a better mother, a better daughter, a better friend, I have to be healthy. I have to be healthy in the mind. I have to be healthy in the body, in the spirit. So what I eat, what I take in, and I mean that based on food, energy, information, all of it has to serve my health.
Absolutely.
And that was something that I realized when I removed myself from a stressful situation, started the new job and was able to look around and be like, wait a minute, you know what? Like, I can take a step back now and I can focus a little bit on me. And it's not selfish to want to better myself.
No, it's not.
Because it wasn't at the expense of my family. It was to better my family.
Right. That's the end result. I think a lot of people say like, oh, well, if I take time for myself now, well, then I'm being selfish because I'm taking it away from this person or that person. And I think learning how to say no in the moment to other people or other expectations that we really only put on ourselves and to say, I'll get to that later. Right now, I have to prioritize me. And if somebody doesn't understand that, then they're probably not somebody that you want in your life anyway. Right.
Absolutely.
I think one of the really great things that you said there is the separation of work and like the rest of life. I think during the pandemic, and I've struggled with this personally, I blended the two so much because when you work from home, the technology is there for you to work literally 24/7 if you wanted to. And I think there's a combination, at least for people like me, I had struggled with it from two ends. One, when I'm working and I'm passionate about something, I throw myself into it completely. And so it's really hard for me to shut myself off unless I'm operating within the framework of, you know, Jesse's framework and your framework, etc., which I am now. But the other end of it was that, you know, sometimes there's expectations of a job, depending upon what kind of a company it is, whether maybe it's a startup, etc., for, you know, just things to get done, right? And how do you... how would you, you know, if you were, what advice would you give to somebody if, you know, perhaps that expectation is there from a boss or if they're, you know, this hard worker that, you know, wants to work from, you know, 8 to midnight, close it down and then wake up at 7 a.m. the next day and do it all again. Like, how do you kind of separate, you know, the home and work aspect if you are remote or if you're in a regular office situation again, now that we're coming back from the pandemic? What's your advice to someone that's in that situation?
Well, I think with the pandemic, the reality is none of us worked from home. We all lived at work.
Mm.
And so one of the things that I told everybody that worked for me at, you know, my old company was set up a space in your house that is specifically only used for work. Like, don't work at your kitchen table. Don't work in your family room. Like, I'm fortunate that I have my own office in my house. But find a space that is just for work that when you're done, you can close the computer, you can walk away from that space, and you're not going to go back to it. Like, if the laptop is on the kitchen table and you can keep checking it, you're going to keep checking it, right? Don't do those things. Like, it's all about boundaries and setting them and making them. I have my office. When I'm done working, I close my computer, I walk out of the room, I turn off the light, I don't come back in here. I just don't. Now, the other thing I think we have to get to is, fortunate for me in the position I'm in now, the way that I'm handled with work is a little different because my boss, who's amazing, has basically said to me, it's not about the hours you work, it's about the work getting done. So if you're doing a good job and the work is getting done, that should be enough. And if you're in a position where you're doing a good job and the work is getting done and then they're coming back and demanding more and more and more, you need to look at deciding if that's the right place for you.
Absolutely.
Because it might not be. It might not be. And unfortunately, for people like me, you, Dan, like, we're hard workers. So when people get a taste of that, they give you more responsibility and they give you more work because you do get your stuff done so fast that they're like, well, she can handle more. And once you start responding at 8 p.m. at night or 9 p.m. at night and doing something and getting it back to them, then they're going to continue to request it. So it's about boundaries. If, you know, you got to ask yourself, you can grind. And listen, you need to grind. But the grind needs to also be on your terms. If you're an entrepreneur, it's a little bit different because you have to do certain things. Like right now with what I'm working on and launching something, like I'm working all day, all night, but like not straight. Like yesterday I went and I had a nail appointment during the day and I went to my daughter's volleyball match, but then I got home at 9:30 last night and I worked until about 11:30 because there was things I needed to get done yesterday, but I set my hours. I just made sure the work got done. And I think that's important. Like, and in reality, if you wake up and you start working at 8 a.m. and you're working till midnight, are you really working efficiently? Right. Are you productive?
Absolutely.
Or are you just working the out? Like, are you just putting time in? What are you doing? Like, really sit back and think about what you're doing. Because I can't imagine anybody has that much physical work to do. And I've run two companies.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I'm aware of that level. Like, you have to wonder, like, are you trying to do stuff that's not in your skill set that somebody else would be better off
Absolutely.
Doing?
Absolutely. So what I'm pointing out there is that there's something that somebody could proactively do as an employee or even as an entrepreneur, et cetera, right? Set boundaries within your work environments, right? Maybe sometimes they're physical if you're at home working remotely, right? Or if you're at an office, make sure that you're out of that room or office where you do the work at a certain time every day. Maybe that fluctuates, you know, on certain outlier days, but, you know, 99.9% of the time you make that separation of church and state, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And you're out of there, and that's a physical boundary. Perhaps maybe it's a boundary that's virtual, where you don't respond to something, you know, past a certain hour. You know, again, perhaps some outlier situations where it's a busy season, etc. But other than that, you know, you set that boundary.
Set the expectations. Yeah, set the expectations. I did this at my past, you know, not this one, but the previous. I would set my out of office at like 8 right. p.m. and it would just say, I'm out of the office. I will, you know, thank you for your email. I will respond by noon the next day. And people, that was the expectation. And then if it's urgent, please feel the reach out. Now, if they reached out, it's because they knew me, they were close enough to me to have my cell phone number to text me.
Got it.
Again, nobody's going to die on the table.
Absolutely.
Nobody's going to, I just had this conversation with somebody that I coach just yesterday, matter of fact, and they were like, they canceled the trip with their family. They didn't go because there was stuff going on at work. And I said to them, let me ask you this question. If you had gotten sick and you were unable to work those 3 days, instead of it being a vacation, what would have happened? And he said to me, he's like, I would have done the work when I got back. I said, and the company wouldn't have imploded? Like, you wouldn't have went out of business? He's like, no. I said, well, then why are you canceling your life for your job? No. You like, that can't happen. Yep. And I think we lose sight of that. We lose sight of it. And it's all about the boundaries and the expectations that we set for people. They're going to do what we allow.
Actively set boundaries and expectations at work is what I'm hearing as the advice from there. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And so let's fast forward a little bit back to the moment that you met Jesse. What was it about him within that speech? I'm curious. Was it that blender moment that you talked about? Or was it the realization that you could be doing better in the various buckets of your life? What was that moment of realization that you said, there's something about this guy, and I don't know where this journey is going to lead me, but I'm going to take his course, and I'm going to take his advice, and not only am I going to take it, I'm going to implement it. What was it about him?
Sitting in the back of the room listening to him, he wasn't saying anything earth-shattering that I didn't know. It was just the way he was saying it, that it just resonated, and I was... The realization in the back of the room and then talking to him after was, I really lost Lori. I'm Angelina and Sophia's mom. I'm Chris's wife. I'm, you know, Lori Wintonick, executive vice president of blah, blah, blah. But where's Lori? Like, you know, in college, they called me Lil G. Everybody who knows me, who's friends with me, still calls me Lil G. Like, where did she go? And it was like, I miss her. And it was like, wow, okay. And then I talked to him. I was like, you know what? Yes. I don't spend any money on myself. It was a couple hundred bucks. It wasn't a big deal. And it was 4 months. I'm like, I'm going to give it a try and really see what comes of it. And I took the course. And as he started to talk, it was like stuff I knew or stuff I had heard. And I was like, I could do this. And I started to just take some of the principles and apply them. Nothing crazy, but like, you know, I used to, and I had stopped, but now when I, like the night before, I write down everything I have to do for today, personally and professionally. And then in the morning I get up, I have my list, and I go right in and I circle the things and I eat the frog. I do the two things on the list that I don't want to do, and I get them done first, because guess what? Those are huge wins. If I have 10 things on the list and those two items I don't want to do are number 7 and 8, I'm going to procrastinate 1 to 6 because I don't want to get to 7.
Absolutely. And that's something that you do. But if I do 7, that list of 10 things.
Daily basis. So when I get, I wake up, I look at my list. I'm like, all right, 7 and 8 get done first. I knock them off. I cross them off the list. And then I get to everything else. I cross it off at the end of the day. Anything that's left over that wasn't important necessarily, or I just didn't get to it, I turn the page. I write them on tomorrow's list. I rip today's out and I throw it away because it's done.
Mm.
And I don't try to keep in my mind what I have to do. I write it all down. I get it out of my brain so it's not clogging up my mind. I put it on paper and it's on my desk for tomorrow. Absolutely. And when I leave my office, I don't have to think about it. And now I go do something else. And it was little things like that, stuff like that he mentioned, and spending more time with people and doing, getting more experiences, and all of these things that Jesse started to talk about. As I started to do it, I was like, wow, like I could feel myself coming back to life and wanting more and doing more and enjoying more. And, you know, people say, oh, you reinvented yourself. Over the last 4 years, I did not reinvent myself. I just upgraded. I'm Lori 2.0 now. I'm you know, the better version of myself from when I was younger, and I've been a better wife, mother, all of these things because of the fact that I'm taking care of myself and I'm making myself a priority. And by doing that, I'm able to prioritize my children and my husband and my job and my friends and my health and make sure that they're all getting ample attention, nothing suffering, because I won't allow it. I won't allow it. It's not negotiable for
Absolutely.
Me.
Absolutely. So if you could kind of sum up like the core, like at the core, like what did you learn? Because I heard a lot of things. I heard, you know, like life optimization. I heard, you know, being able to pay attention to each of my buckets in a meaningful and intentional way and not feeling that you were cutting anything short. I heard, you know, efficiency optimizations, being able to write things down on a list, etc. If you had to define like one theme or center of what Jesse taught you how to do, within the last 4 years, what would that be?
I live my life for a living.
Love that. You're building your life resume.
I live my life for a living. And part of that is my job. I work and I make money and I work out and I eat right. And I have passion for certain things that I do. Like I teach yoga now for fun. I spend time with the people that I really want to invest my time in. I've shaken away all the other nonsense, and the people who get my time are the people who I love their energy and I want to give my energy back to them. I'm really intentionable, really, really intentional, like focused. Everything that I do now is based on what I really want, what brings me joy. And if it doesn't, you know, there's the method, I don't know, Marie Kondo, I think it is, where they say, you know, like something in your house, pick it up and hug it. And if it doesn't give you joy, throw it away. And I'll hug my husband and I'll be like, yeah, no, you got to go. You know, like I make fun of him. But in reality, as a theme overall in life, it's real. You shouldn't be doing things that aren't bringing you joy and happiness. I love going to watch my daughters play volleyball. I love seeing them thrive on the court, win, lose, whatever. And so, yeah, I'm going to drive to Brooklyn and then home and then back to Bloomfield to Brooklyn. And then I'm going to do that. I'm going to go to Vegas for something for work and fly home on a red eye so I can make my daughter's game, because I find immense joy in doing those things. I find joy in teaching yoga. I find incredible joy and a reward in coaching people like you, Dan, like the connections that I've made, being able to share with people and help them accomplish amazing things. That's how I want to spend my time.
Absolutely.
I don't like all the other stuff. It's just noise. Mm-hmm. It's just noise. So that's the one thing that Jesse's really taught me that I've really applied, is finding a way to live my life for a living.
I love that. And
it's non-negotiable.
Absolutely. And you're doing it in a way, too, that you're not just, you know, finding the time to go to the gym. You're not just finding the time to go to your, you know, your daughter's, you know, volleyball game. You mentioned it. You're focused. You're able to accomplish each of them sort of as a Hall of Fame mom, wife, entrepreneur, you know, employee, et cetera. You're finding all of these different ways to be able to not just check the box, but meet those expectations and then blow through them and exceed them, which I think is the most incredible part. You know, you mentioned in there that, you know, you've been able to work with all these incredible people throughout your journey with Jesse. So take me from, you're launching a coaching program with him now, right? Which is absolutely incredible. Yeah. And we'll get to that in a second, because I want to give you a chance to tell people what that's about, etc. But take me from, you know, Lori, who met Jesse, took the course, you take the course, then what happens? How does your journey, you know, when was that? And how does that journey kind of progress from there to get us to today?
Okay. So one thing I'm going to say before I answer that question is, you mentioned something about finding time. you will never, ever, ever, ever find time. You have to make time.
Absolutely. Intentionally.
That's it. You have 24 hours. Yeah, you have 24 hours. You're not going to find more than those 24 hours. It's not like all of a sudden, it's not like reaching into your coat pocket and pulling out a $20 bill from last winter. No, like the time is the same. It's the same all the, you know, you have to make that a decision intentionally to do. So I will say that. Now, to your question. So I take the course with Jesse. I love it. He is launching the BYLR 365 course, which is now a year-long program after the four-month course is going to end. And I'm not sure what to do. It's a couple thousand dollars. You know, I'm a mom. I got kids in sports, travel, all this stuff. I don't spend money on myself. I wear the same clothes. Right. Like I don't buy designer stuff. It's not who I am. Trying to decide what to do. Jesse's launching his Living with the Monk book at the time, and he's doing a book launch in New York. And he DMs me and asks, he's like, "You're in New Jersey. Are you going to come to the book launch?" I'm like, "Yes, I am." Like, you know, I mean, Jesse is like, "Oh, I'll be there." So I get my girlfriend Jackie. We go to the book launch. We walk in. And he's like, "Lori." I'm like, "Oh my God, he remembers me." I met him one time in person and we've had multiple calls, but Jesse's really great like that. We have a great conversation. The book launch was awesome. He's like, "Are you going to do Elite 365? I'm sorry. It was called BYLR 365 at the time. And I'm like, I don't know if I can. I just don't know. He's like, "I would love for you to be in it. Like, I really would love for you to be in it, but I understand, like, Jackie and I go to dinner and after the book launch, and she said to me, she's like, "Lori, like, you have to figure out how to make this work because your energy is so different around him that you need to stay in this. Like, you need to figure it out." And I walked into my boss's office the next day and I said to him, I was like, "Okay, you pay for coaching for all of the executives. And as an executive, I really want to do this coaching program. Will you help me?" And he said, "Yeah, I'll pay for half."
Incredible.
So I joined the course and I did it. So it was BYLR 365. It was a whole year long program. There were two retreats in Atlanta, and I went to the first one, met a ton of people. I walked in the room and I sat there like, "What am I doing here? I don't belong here." Like, these are people like making, you know, $1 million businesses. They've written books, like all this stuff. And I'm like, "Okay, I'm just Lori. Like, what am I doing here?" And, but the more I spoke to people, I realized I had a lot to give them too. And fast forward a couple months, we're supposed to have the second retreat. I'm going. And then I get the notice comes home that my daughter's going to be inducted into the, so I'm supposed to go on Wednesday. My daughter's being inducted into the National Honor Society on Tuesday night. So I'm like, "Okay, no big deal. My husband can go to that. I can still fly down to Atlanta on Tuesday." Then the other daughter gets a note that her artwork is being displayed by the mayor on Tuesday night. So I'm like,
"Your kids are real underachievers here."
Yeah. I mean, I don't know where they came from. So I'm a little disappointed in them. But so now I'm like, "Okay, well, I can't go to Atlanta Tuesday because my husband can't be in both places and I can't miss this because they're my kids." And then I find out, oh, and also Sophia has to be in Philadelphia on Thursday for a volleyball tournament.
God.
And even though she doesn't play until Friday, Saturday, Sunday, she has to be there early for some tryout for blah, blah, blah. Okay, so I'm like, "All right, so Atlanta's not happening. Yep. There's no way." And my daughter came in. My older daughter came in and she said to me, "Mom, what does Jesse always say?" And I looked at her. She goes, "Remember tomorrow." I go, "What?" She's like, "How are you going to feel on Wednesday when you wake up and you're not in Atlanta? Because you stayed home to watch me walk across the stage for 30 seconds to get a piece of paper that really doesn't matter."
Wow.
And I went, "Okay." She's like, "You need to do this for you." I'm like, "My 17-year-old kid sees a difference in me and wants me to miss something because she knows it's important." And I went, "Okay, let me figure this out." So I sat down. I got on. I looked on United. I'm like looking at flights. I went, "Okay." I went to National Honor Society Tuesday. My husband went to the mayor thing for the artwork. Wednesday morning, I caught the first flight out to Atlanta, like it was 6 a.m. or whatever. I got there. I spent the day at the retreat. I took the last flight out and flew home. Thursday morning, I got up and I drove to Philly.
Oh, my God.
And it was at that moment I realized the old Lori would have said, "No, I can't do this." The new Lori went, "Why not?" And that was a huge shift. And now I live my entire life with "why not" instead of "what if." And that, and when I walked in that day and Jesse saw me, he gave me a big hug and he was like, "I thought you weren't coming." And I was like, "Yeah, I didn't either." And then I realized there was no reason I couldn't be here. And he was like, "All right, Laura." And then I went to camp BYLR where I did incredible, crazy stuff, which is amazing. And I continued on the program. He launched the Calendar Club. He asked me to be an accountability coach, which I was floored. And then next thing I know, I'm in the, you know, I'm coaching the accountability, you know, program with the Calendar Club. And that's where I got to meet you. And here we are.
That's incredible. I mean, first of all, that's a wild story. And there's so many ups, downs, you know, everything. But I think the one thing that I pulled out there was, not only is, and this is pivotal to something we said earlier, right? Be selfish in order to be selfless. Think about the impact that the changes that you were making for you had on your daughter, for her to come in and to say that to you, right? She was saying it to you, but the only reason that she had absorbed that information was because you decided to go on a journey of self-discovery and you know, change and updates, as you pointed out, right? You're still Lori, but you're just Lori 2.0. And so it's because you decided to make yourself better that your daughter was able to absorb some or a lot of that and then come in at a pivotal moment and say, Mom, you got to go do this, right? Come watch me for 30 seconds, but then make it happen. And that's just incredible to me, because you're then passing it on to your to others that are around you too. And I've felt that, at least I think, in my own journey, you know, with Jesse in the program, because I took the BYLR course in the beginning as well. And you know, it's been a consistent journey. But I think that's the most important thing that I pulled out of there, was that you are literally emanating, you know, progression, not just for yourself, but for other people around you. The better Lori is what made you a better mom, which is what allowed you to, you know, instill that belief in your daughter that you could go do this thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny because, you know, so now I'm launching this program with Jesse, which was just crazy, because he actually, when the Calendar Club launched 60 days in, I sent him a text and said, hey, I'd love to give you a 60-day look back on what I think is working really well and where I think we could make some improvements. And he's like, yes, please send it. And Jesse doesn't like to read a lot of stuff, but I sent him this detailed email. And I'm the type of person, if I'm going to bring you a problem, I'm going to bring you three solutions to every problem. So I did. And I laid out exactly what I thought was working well and the areas that I thought we could change or improve. And I gave him my opinions of what I thought we could do. And about a week later, he, you know, texted me and said, can we have a call and go through it? And then when I said, I was like, Jess, we got on the phone. I'm like, I know it was a lot of information. He's like, no, I read it. I read it three times. And I'm like, oh. And so from that point forward, we just had a lot of conversations about the program, about things we could do, because he could use that operational mindset that I have on really how we could run different things. And we kept that conversation going for months. And then he reached out to me, I guess back in May, and just said, like, I, you know, I'm thinking about launching this coaching program. A lot of people ask me to do one-on-one coaching. I don't want to be in that space. I'm just a mentor who kind of lives my life. And if people want to try what I do, like, that's great. But there's a, you know, people do want it. And can you, you know, what do you think would happen with this? And we kind of went back and forth for a while. And I'm like, yeah, this could work. And then at the end of the call, he said to me, he's like, okay, but I'm going to need you full time. And I was like, what? Like, he's like, what do you think, we were spitballing? I'm like, yeah, I thought you were just asking my opinion. Yeah. And next thing I know, I gave a month's notice at my job, and I started working for Jesse full time. So
when did that transition
happen? I gave my notice in June. I started with him officially, even though I was working with him, July 15th of this year.
Wow. That's incredible.
So, and now we're putting together this whole Elite 365 program, which is what I called the BYLR program before, because it's elites in my head. And it's going to be really incredible. And it's just, all it is it's taking his principles and really taking them to the next level with people who are really, really, truly invested. I mean, the Calendar Club is launching for 2022. It's amazing. This is just the next level. And, you know, sometimes I get that, like, why me? But the reality is, in my opinion, I feel like Jesse reached out to me because I'm living what he laid out. Like, I took the principles that worked for me, not all of them. Like, there's some things that I'm not interested in doing or didn't work for me, but the stuff that did, I just live it now. And it's making all the difference in my life, and people see it, and I'm excited to help other people do the same.
I am just, like, so energized right now just by hearing your story and the milestones and just the incredible growth that you've seen, you know, over the course of not just, you know, your journey with Jesse, but with, you know, your life, right? Give me a little bit of an insight into the Elite 365. What is that like? And what are you most excited about, you know, the process of building it?
Well, anytime that someone like Jesse, you know, gives you something like this and says, hey, can you basically build this from the ground up and you know, here's an idea, but can you figure out how we can do this and lay out the whole program, and then can you manage it, and oh, can you be my head coach too? And it was like, oh my god, like everything I could possibly want to do and more. And it scared me to death, which is what I loved about it, because it was the first time in a very long time that I was like super challenged and afraid. And that's what I need in my life. I need to be pushed. So the program itself is a year-long program. It is follows Jesse's planning for the year. It's a whole huge checklist of everything that he does in his life, all the different buckets we talked about: business, personal, family, health, wellness. And you go through a planning session with myself and or another coach. And then you have monthly calls following up to making sure you're staying on your goals. They're like hour-long coaching calls where we're actually coaching you through what you're doing and holding you to what you said you wanted to do. They're not checking calls. They're full out, you know, push calls. There'll be a second planning session in July, because we all know we set year goals, but then we fall off 6 months in. So it's 6 months in, we're going to sit back down and go through everything that you wanted to accomplish. Where are you? And what do we need to pivot or change going for the next 6 months? So you have that with a coach. Jesse's going to be doing live group calls. We have three dates, but you get two retreats. So you get 3 to 4, you know, 2 to 3 days of time with the group and Jesse. You know, two of them are like, one will be like a spa where we're doing cold plunges and steam rooms and saunas and, you know, eating the way Jesse eats and a lot of mindset and mastermind. One will be, you know, up in the Connecticut, one's down in Georgia. The one in Georgia will be a little bit more like trail hiking, things like that. Some yoga, you know, meditation, Wim Hof breathing, all of those type of things. And then we have one of the three is a Misogi trip. So that'll be experiential, where like we're doing something out of the box and hard. So you could be out in the elements, you could be sleeping in a tent in the snow on a mountain, you could be whitewater rafting, you could, you know, be hiking through the Grand Canyon. Like, it's just whatever crazy idea Jesse comes up with, which also scares me to death, which I'm super excited that I have to do as well. And then we have expert mentors. So the people that Jesse actually goes to for business, finance, fasting, wellness, and mindset.
Which is incredible to me, by the way.
Relationship advice.
He's an expert on all those things already. And like then to be able to get the people that are, you know, coaching Jesse, it's just like, that's mind-blowing to me.
Yeah, so you have access to all of them as well. And so that's what the program has. Yeah. And it's limited to 65 total people, 50 spots for community and the general public, and then the other 12 to 15 are VIP slots. And it's incredible.
That's awesome.
And some of the people that have, you know, expressed interest, like, I'm super excited to start and also to see, you know, how it goes for the first year, but to really learn how I could make it better. I just want to help people improve their lives. And if I can, you know, be part of the journey, like, I'm not responsible for anybody's change. I just love to kind of be watching it and cheering them on and pushing them to be more, do more, and just live more.
I love that. If somebody, you and I have talked about the price tag for that program, it's a little bit higher than someone like myself can afford right now. If someone like me, and I am involved, so I know it's possible, wants to get involved and get some of the same principles and the same coaching, right, but perhaps at a little bit of a lower cost point, what can they do?
So there is the Calendar Club, and the Build Your Life Resume course comes with the Calendar Club, and it's all of the principles of what Jesse Itzler, it's basically how he lives his life and what he does. The Calendar Club comes with the calendar and a planner, which are really tools to use to put those principles into action. And that's so my program's like $25,000, which is pretty high, but it's the experiences and all of that that are, you know, a little bit more involved. But the Calendar Club, I think this year it's $799. I think it's a very affordable program, and it's a great investment. It really truly is, because it gives you access to all of the principles, the tools, and a community of people. And I hate to say like-minded people, because I don't like to be around like-minded people, but I like to be around people who are like motivated, maybe is a better way to say it, who want to accomplish a lot and do things, and their things may be very different of mine, but the mindset is there that they want to learn and they want to be better. And they, you know, so when you have that community of people, like some of my best friends are part of the Build Your Life Resume community now, you know, because a lot of the people in my life that they look at me like I'm crazy. They're like, what are you doing? And I'm like, you wouldn't understand it. And it's okay. And I love you. But this is a journey that I'm on now. Even like my husband doesn't really want to take part in it, and it's okay as long as he supports me in it, because I have such a great community support from everybody that's in the Calendar Club and in Build Your Life Resume. So definitely check out the Calendar Club. If you go to Instagram and you go to Build Your Life Resume, information is posted there, and it's worth every cent.
I can attest to that.
I think of the money.
I'm literally a living testimony, you know, as the host of the show, because I'm in it. And the only reason that I want to say too, by the way, the only reason that I'm interviewing Lori and that this show is happening is because of the program. It was part of my 90 days goal. We just literally had a call discussing about this, and it's pre-launched, this show being recorded. But the only reason that we're even on here, that we're having this conversation, is because of that. So I'm a living testimony to that this can work. That it can work. It does work. So, you know, just really quickly, thank you to you for, you know, coaching me through, you know, what has been a hell of a year, and getting me to this point. So I'm really excited to continue to work with you and the rest of the community and the team. I got two more questions to ask you, but I want to just really quickly just acknowledge you for being transparent and incredible and honest, and just really providing a lot of value to me as the host and also this audience as well. So thank you so much for that.
Thank you, Dan. And just, you know, to what you said, I mean, first of all, I appreciate the kind words, but understand you've put in the work and you're here doing what you're doing because you made a choice that you were more important than the excuses that you had. And you really have transformed yourself and you're living the lifestyle now. You're really doing the things, you're setting the intention, and you're following through. And again, I'm, like I said to you when we spoke on our coaching call, like, I'm just so excited to see the transformation occur, and I love every minute of it, and I applaud you because I know you, it's been a lot of hard work, and it's, you know, there's days where it's up and down, and but you're still making sure that there's progress there, and you know, I say it all the time, progress not perfection, and you're doing it, and so I, you know, kudos to you and I applaud you, and I'm just grateful that I was able to be a part of it.
Those words coming from you mean so much, and I really appreciate it. Two more quick questions. If there's someone that really wants to get somewhere and attain a goal, and they're not there yet, and they feel like they've got a long way to go, and it feels like they're kind of in quicksand, every step they take, it's not getting them any closer, what advice would you give them to close that gap, to start taking active steps toward that goal or the person that they want to be? What would your advice to them be to just start?
Make sure your goal is realistic. Make sure that your why behind the goal is really, really strong. Really, really strong. I do not want to run a marathon right now. And if I set a goal to run a marathon, I am going to do everything in my power to sabotage myself running that marathon. And it'll be subconscious. I'll get up and be like, oh, my leg hurts today. I'm not going to go run. Or, you know. So make sure that you're not doing that, number one. So make sure this goal is something that you're really invested in. And if so, make sure you have a very clear plan and a path to get there, because a goal without a plan is just a dream. And dreams are great, but they're never going to come true unless you put the work in. So set the plan and make sure that the plan has small, actionable steps that you feel you can have wins. I always use this little, there's a book called Traction, and in it they talk about clearing a huge field. And the two boys are standing there, and they're looking at this field, and they're going, we're never going to do it. And the one boy picks up and throws a rock, and he says, we just have to clear to the rock. So they clear the field to the rock, and then they pick up the rock, they throw it again, they clear, they keep doing it, and all of a sudden they turn around and they've cleared the entire field. So set up small things. Just throw that rock to something tangible and small that you can accomplish today. Move that needle just a little bit. Take the win and build off of that.
Small, consistent action reaps massive change in benefits and growth over time. I love that. That actually ties into my next question, to my last question, which is, what is your definition of growth?
Learning.
Love that.
The more you learn, the more you grow. It's experiences and knowledge and great energy will help you to become more and to become better. And as you have those things, you can grow in all the areas of your life. And check in the ego. It really is. You can't grow if you have a huge ego. You have to let that all go. You have to know that you're gonna fall down and you're gonna fail, and that's part of the success of who you are. And build off of that.
I love that, Lori. Thank you so much. Mic drop moment. Thank you for being on this podcast. I really appreciate
it. Thank you,
Dan. And if people want to, you know, get in contact with you, follow you along your journey, where would they best be able to reach you?
So I am constantly on Instagram. It seems to be the place I go the most. And I am under Lil G 23. So it's LILLG23. Right. On Instagram, you can find me there. And I'm also, you know, with Jesse. So if you ever reach out, if you go to the Jesse Itzler website, if you type in elite-365, you'll get to the page where you can put in your information and get to me. And yeah, I mean, I'm also on Twitter and I'm on Facebook, but my last name is horrendous to spell. But so you can start on Instagram and find me there.
Of all the times that we've been you know, talking and getting on calls, I just finally memorized it. So now pronouncing it might be a different ballgame, but we'll get to that eventually.
Right.
Lori, thank you so much for this. It's been an incredible interview. And again, just want to acknowledge you for being just an incredible human being and someone who wants to help others reach their goals and their best versions of themselves, which is what this podcast is all about. So thank you. And we'll chat again soon.
Thank you, Dan. I appreciate it.
Hey guys, thank you so incredibly much for tuning into today's episode. It means the world to me, and I am so grateful for you and any member of this audience. If you found today's episode valuable, please go over to Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever it is that you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us 5 stars, and subscribe to the show. Remember, you are valuable, you are worthy, and you are already enough. Now let's go out there and grow together.